Last week we talked about the work, well, the last couple of weeks, about the works of a prophet, and we are working to define what... I thought somebody said something. We're working to define what a prophet is, what a prophet's life is like. And what should we expect if we see a prophet? How closely do we examine their life? Now, remember last week, for those who were there, we took Roger and made him chairman of the church board in Kent, Ohio. Y'all are not from Kent, are you? Okay, you're not from Kent, are you? Either. Okay, all right. Kent, Ohio. And we looked at the lives of some of the prophets, and we looked at Moses, and we looked at some of the others, and kind of what was our conclusion?
They should be kicked out of church about
Boy, they had some problems. We looked at Moses, and here he got angry and struck a rock. By the way, I was not angry last week about the clock. I was angry because I couldn't find a window to throw the clock out. That's what I was angry about. So, and we looked at the lives of some of these prophets, and we found out that they're human. And they had mistakes. Big mistakes. But yet they were still a prophet of God. Now this is going to become very, very important in the next few weeks, because obviously we're going to look at the life of Ellen White. And we're going to see where she... Long time no see! How are you doing? You automatically qualify for a visitor's pack. There's two ways to get a visitor's pack. Be a visitor or just stay out of here for a long time. He qualifies for stay. No, he's been busy doing lots of things with the in the church. So we're going to look at the life of Ellen White. And I will tell you ahead of time that we will hold her, if we think she is a prophet, we will hold her to a higher scrutiny than we ever hold anybody in the Old Testament that we believe is a prophet. So that's where we're heading for, and we're going to discuss those topics. Today, I'm going to discuss the duty of a prophet. Now, I need a designated reader. Would anybody like to volunteer? How many thinks Ron would make a good designated reader? Oh, very good. Amos 3:7. I want you to look that up. Now, I want you to keep in mind, here's the children of Israel at 722. This is where I ran out of time last week because we had a lousy clock. 722, they're going to be destroyed. And God sent not one prophet, not two prophets, not three prophets, not four prophets. He sent five prophets to the children of Israel to say, hey, don't you understand what's going on? All right, Amos 3:7.
But the Lord does nothing ahead of time without sharing His plans with His prophets.
Okay. Amos 3:7. The Lord does nothing ahead of time without sharing His plan with His prophets. Now, how would you interpret that? What's He saying?
They know what's going to happen.
Pardon?
They know what's going to happen.
Going to know what's happened. Okay, what else?
He reaches out to mankind. In a way, I mean, he's always reaching out. So he does nothing because he's reaching out.
Okay. So he's going to let us know what's going on, and it's his way of reaching out. What else?
Prepares people.
Prepares people? What way?
No surprises. Somebody is the spokesperson.
Okay. So is it fair to say then that God's not in the surprise business?
He allows preparation time.
Pardon?
Preparation time.
Okay, for what reason?
I think ultimately to save more.
Okay, that's an excellent answer. Must keep in mind that God will take us and allow us to go places that we never thought about if that's what it takes to get our attention so that He can have the opportunity to reveal Himself to us. If you're the most wicked king that Israel has ever had, He will allow you to be taken into captivity by the Babylonians. He will allow a hook through your nose, chains on your wrist, chains on your feet, and go through the streets of Babylon with all of those laughing and saying, if you're the best that God has, your God is nothing. The most wicked king that Israel ever had, he ranks right up with Adolf Hitler and Idi Amin. And does anybody remember how this man's life ended?
In tune with God.
He accepted God. God brought him back to Israel in what position?
King.
You ever heard of a guy named Saul? Do you realize that if it takes you riding on a horse on your way to kill and torture Christian people, if it takes God blinding you, knocking off your horse, and being blind for 3 days to get your attention, He will do it. God will do whatever He has to do to get your attention. Why? Why?
Because He loves you.
He loves you. How far do you go with your children? How far do you go with your grandchildren? Do you say to them once or twice, well, I've told you what to do? No. You try every way in the world to get their attention so they'll sit and listen and you can be a guidance to them. So, Amos 3:7, we have here that God promises He won't do anything. No surprises. If He does, He'll send a prophet. Now, it's interesting to the children of Israel that were about to get wiped out. Would you go back and read Amos 2:11-12? This is the children of Israel before this promise.
I raised up prophets from among your sons, and some of your young men chose to be Nazarites, setting themselves apart for me. Isn't that so? But you forgot what I had done for you. You made your young men drink wine and break the vows they had made. You told my prophets not to prophesy.
Okay. Do you see the condition that the children of Israel were in? God says, I've done two things. I've raised up prophets, four of them. Some of the mightiest ones, Elijah. I've set aside a group of people called the Nazarenes, dedicated to God. One of the things they had was no strong drink. And you come along and they make the Nazarenes drink wine, and you say to the prophets, we don't even want to hear what you got to say. Now, are these people in pretty good shape? Okay, now, before we get to verse 7, read 3:1-7 and see how this text fits in. Here is your Father, here is your God appealing to the children of Israel, and then He finally says to them in 3:7, listen, I won't do anything until I send you a prophet so you can beware. Now, put the thing into context.
Chapter 3. People of Israel and Judah, listen to the word the Lord has spoken against the house of Jacob, against those He brought out from the land of Egypt. The Lord said, of all people on earth, you're the ones I have chosen to be known as my people.
Okay, let's stop there. Do you get the picture? I brought you out from the world, and you are the ones that I have chosen to be my people. What a blessing. And I want you to listen in context to how does this affect us today. As we found out last night when we went through our Friday night group, you know, we can read the Old Testament especially, and we can read it as a history book, we can read it as an information book, but unless we take those lessons and apply it to our lives today, we've missed the whole point. So it has to apply to us. So here it is. I've chosen you to be a nation to represent me. Continue.
This is what makes your sin so terrible and why I need to discipline you, because you belong to me. Can two people walk together unless they both agree to do so? Does a lion roar from the thicket to kill when he sees no prey? Does he growl from his den when he has nothing to protect? Does a bird get caught in a trap if the trap has not been set and baited? Does a trap spring shut when nothing sets it off? Does a war trumpet sound in a city without making people afraid? Does defeat come to Samaria without the Lord having done it? And then verse 7.
Okay, hold on to that. What's he saying?
Cause and
effect. Yeah. There's a reason for everything. And if you're off the path, what are you going to reap? Whatever consequences you have. There's a trap set. There's a lion roaring. There's Samaria right across the border ready to come in and destroy you. All of these things are coming. Now, he does not leave them without hope. Verse 7 again.
But the Lord knows nothing ahead of time without sharing his plan with his prophets.
And then read verse 8.
When a lion roars, who isn't afraid? When the Lord gives a man a message, who dares to change it?
Okay. How would that fit into our modern day? Or is this message simply for the children of Israel in 722, just before they're about to be annihilated by Samaria? How does it fit us today?
I think it kind of goes back to the fact that God is still in charge and things are unfolding as they should. And sometimes we tend to think it's our job to help God. I mean, not help, but to become God and do it the way we think it should be. I mean, I'm thinking my own experience as a father. Sometimes I have the experience of wanting to go and alter and help them do it and realize, okay, they've got to figure it out. I think I have an understanding that they can utilize, but right now they're not available to me at times. So that's the challenge. And I think in our relationship to God, our Father, there's a recognition, you know, we're where we need to be. That's how can I be a part of this and make this work.
Okay. What was God's plan for the children of Israel? He brought them out of Egypt. What was his plan?
Taking them in the promised land.
Okay. And what were they to do there?
Prosper.
And do what else?
Set up a witness.
Witnessing program. And be the evangelistic team of life. They were to be so prosperous in the crossroads of where the world was at that time that as people traveled through and around that land, they would stop and say, "You have something we don't have." We see happy people. We see happy families. We see prospering fruit trees, way of life. What is it that you have we don't have? And what was to be the answer?
God.
Let me tell you about our God. That's what I like about Robbie. His mission was he wants to go in and be among the people and then eventually tell them about God. Very important way of witnessing. Did God goof?
He did, but the people did.
Okay. Now, Did he send Elijah the great prophet to tell them what was going to happen? The answer is yes. In case you don't know, yes, he did. Did they get the message? By the way, what kind of witness did Elijah make? Remember, he stood before the 400 priests of Baal, and he got there in magnificent show of God's mighty power, and he said, "Choose you today who you'll serve. If God is God, serve Him. If Baal is God, serve Him." And that was magnificent, was it not? Did Elijah do good?
Yes.
Man of God, man of faith. Well, what scared him that he went and ran and hid and almost died and sat in a cave and said, "Wow, I'm through, I'm gone, God doesn't care, wished I was dead." What was that that scared him? Yeah, one woman who says, "I'm going to kill you." What a prophet! Did the children of Israel have the message from Elijah? Why didn't God stop there? Pardon? Wasn't enough. So he sends Elisha. Wasn't enough. You see, I think that if I was one of the children of Israel and I hear eyewitness tell about how a chariot swung down and picked up Elijah and took him to heaven with all the angels, I think I would say, "Man, I've got to go back and reread and relook at that message that Elijah had." But it doesn't work that way. And he sends Hosea, and he sends Obadiah, and he sends Amos. God will respond in our life whatever He has to do. When Noah preached for 120 years, how effective was he? Not very effective. Have you ever wondered why all the animals came into the ark? The door was shut and it sat there for 7 days. Why? Why? God tired? You want to give Noah a chance to get all the animals in place and get the little everything fixed up? He'd been spending 120 years on that. Why?
He would have no concern that he had overlooked someone. They were all out there taunting him.
All heresy. See, it's visitors, they just bring that heresy right into their class, I'm telling you. Try to get rid of it, but it just keeps coming back. Why do you think that is the answer? Why do you think that God brought those animals in the way He did?
Pretty impressive.
Absolutely impressive, especially if you worship nature. And that's what these people did. Not worship nature in the way we worship nature and find God. They worship nature as if it was a god unto itself. And they thought that these animals had all these things. And then all of a sudden they're standing there and here come seven little lambs. and here comes two little birds, and here comes two giraffes, and here comes two of these, two of these, two of these, and they all just very orderly are just walking out from the forest, out from everywhere, walking up the gangplank into the ark. If you worship these animals, you worship this, quote, nature, would that not get your attention? And how many did it affect? Not those that got on the ark. Some did, some died. Methuselah died the year before the flood. So there were some that died. But for the vast majority, didn't affect them any. And then the door shuts. And it sits there for 7 days. If you were outside that ark, what do you think your thinking would be about?
Whether I should get in that ark or not.
Yeah, I wonder what in the heck is going on. This is always my favorite question. What if on day 5, somebody went up I've decided I want in.
I believe God would open the door and open the ark.
Who said that?
The heresy lady.
What do you think God would do? Sorry, too late. Sorry, you kind of bypassed.
Well, there are times when it actually is too late.
On whose part? Pardon?
On our part.
Thank you. Never on God's part. The devil would like for you to think that God gets up one day and says, "That's it." We decide our own destiny. We look at the cross of Calvary. We look at the goodness of God. We look at that ark. If we're in Sodom and Gomorrah, we see the angels. We see them literally telling everybody what was going to happen. We see dragging out Lot and his wife and daughters. See all of that, and we decide our own destiny. And God comes along and does whatever He has to do to reveal Himself to us, that we have enough information, enough of His love, that we look and we accept or we reject. There are no surprises from God. Why do you think in the book of Revelation, after we have the great panoramic view, that it says that every knee, including Satan, will bow, and what will they say about God?
Yes.
You're just. You're right. There's no argument. There's no one saying, "Well, if you had only done this," because they will see in this great panoramic view, if you'd only done this, He's done it 50 times and 100 times. And you look at it and you say the only thing you can say is He is just. He is righteous. He is correct. Does that change the heart? Because what's the next words they say? Let's go up there and take that city and kill them. It's what sin does. There is no walk in the fence. It's what sin does. God did not leave Adam and Eve without any hope. He took them to the entrance. We have the picture of the angel saying, "Get out." I want you to look at the picture of God taking them by the hand and leading them out. big difference. And there it was. He met with them at the entrance to the Garden of Eden. He come along with a world that got so wicked that He said, in mercy, I've got to cut this short. He gave every person there every opportunity. For 120 years, a man preached and built, preached and built. And then the animals came. That ark sat there for 7 days as people looked, as they considered, as they thought. By every means, if somebody knocked on the door and said, I want in, our Heavenly Father says, what took you so long, child? But nobody did. Hosea comes to the children of Israel. Beautiful Hosea 11, Hosea 10. Read it. How can I let you go? I took you in my arms. I raised you as a child. I did all of these things. And you want to join to your idols. How I weep. Jesus came along to illustrate what the Old Testament had said all along. We just missed it when we read it. We saw the guts, the blood, the harshness. But when you go back and read it and reread it and study it, it's all about the goodness of God. It's just that He works with a bunch of stubborn children. And so finally Jesus came to this earth and said, I have to show you what the Old Testament was. You've read it, you've studied it, you've listened, but you don't understand it. I'll live it. And so He did lived it. All along God said, you're to be a blessing wherever you go. Was Jesus a blessing wherever He went? Yes. It's not about doctrine. It's not about a bunch of things. It's about knowing Jesus. It's about knowing God. When you know Him, the other things will fall into place and make sense. Why did God send prophets? What else was He supposed to do? If God thought it would work, He would write His message out into the sky where we all could read it. Wouldn't work. Must live it. Any comments? Could there be a prophet today? It's a tough question. Tough question. But I know one thing. If Jesus said, if we don't do what we're supposed to do, who will do it? The rocks. Have you had a rock speak to you lately? No, not lately. He's going to get the message across. Why? He has to. As we believe that we're a church with a message, we must get the message across. That is our duty. Our question is, what is our message? Jesus came to say, I've come to show you the Father. Preach no sermons on doctrine. Whatever doctrine there was, He undid it. Sabbath being one of them. He's one out there Sabbath breaking in the Jewish eyes. He was the one that went to the well and talked to a Samaritan dog. He's the one that went in where nobody went and healed people. God will do what He has to do to get His message across. We cannot, in my opinion, afford to sit and say, well, we have it all. Maybe we do have it all. I think as a church we've been tremendously blessed. Tremendously blessed. Question is, what have we done with it? What will God do? He says when there's tough times, when there's turns in the roads, when something is going to happen, there will be no surprises because I'll do what? I'll reveal it of what's going to happen. Yes, we have a message that we can trace all the way to the end of time. But I got a question to ask you, and I only ask fair questions. Have we done our part? If we have, and we're online, then I don't think that we need any particular guidance. But what if we're not online? World War I, we said, as a church, this is it. One of the French generals said that Armageddon was a perfect place to fight a battle over in Megiddo, down in the hills, and he says it's a perfect place for armies to come in and fight a battle. Period. How many believe that's a perfect place to fight an army, a war today on the plains of Megiddo? We kill people thousands of miles away and don't even know who they are, and if they're enemy, don't care. Things change. People change. We must be open to what directions God has for us. The biggest danger is, as a student, and teachers here can relate to it, when the student says, I know it all. How many of y'all have teenage grandkids? I know that Sue and I are the only ones that's ever heard this. Well, you just don't understand. You're old, and I know what's best for me. Do we do that as a Christian, as an organization, as a church? Do we ever do that? I tell my sales reps, I'm taking them through a 13-week course on selling, it's interesting. I ask the question whenever I start one of these series, how many of you have read anything on selling in the last month? And out of 15 people, how many hands do you think I get that says they've read something on selling in the last month? Zero or one? Why? Who said that?
They know it all.
That's right. They know it all. You see, when you do that, you stop learning, you stop progressing, and there's always some kid down here about 23 years old that is mastering your profession and wants to take your job away from you someday. And he will in the business world if you stop progressing. Same thing with our personal relationship with God. Can't get that relationship reading about Him once a month. Same thing with our church. We must never say we have it all. We're told that Ellen White's writings are a light that shines underneath the door to illuminate that which is about God, and there's many more lights to come. We can never afford to say, as a person, as a church, as a denomination, we have it all. Because if we're going to spend eternity studying the character and the nature of cross, and the eternity studying Calvary and the universe, how dare we think we've mastered it here in 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years. I don't know if our church is going to have another prophet. If one believes in Ellen White, and I do, I think that her work is fantastic and has a lot of things to do. And what convinced me that she had a relationship with God is when I read the book, The Desire of Ages, I had to come away with something that said, I don't know if she has all of her facts correct, especially when you read the original manuscripts, which I have, but I do know this. She knew and knows Jesus Christ and God. It comes across on those pages. If we need more direction, more clearer light, a new direction, not fundamentals, new direction, a new understanding of what we have, I believe God will send it. Did the disciples have the picture at Calvary? What were they doing Thursday night just before he died on Friday?
Sleeping.
Pardon?
Sleeping.
Sleeping and what else? Fighting on what position? Number one. They had no clue. And God did not hold them clueless. He kept working and working and working. And my, when they caught it, what happened? They converted almost, a message went to almost all the known world. Didn't have TV, didn't have radio, didn't have newspapers, didn't have all of these things. They still found a way to get the message out. Why? Because it mattered. Any comments? We've got 1 minute.
I think it mattered because of what personally happened to them.
That's right.
I think that's, to me, always the key for me in my life. It's what's happening to me that makes what I have to tell anybody matter, because of my own development of my understanding and relationship to God.
That's right. Yeah. The greatest testimony that we can give is, I met Christ, this is what I'm like. Father in heaven, we're so thankful for your love and your kindness. Amos 3:7 says, whatever happens, you won't catch us by surprise. Father, we pray that we study the past, that we look at the present, and we be open for the future. And above all, you guide us in all three. This is your promise. Thank you for loving us. Bring us back safely next Sabbath is our prayer in the name of Jesus. Amen.